IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
My podcast where I talk about what's happening in the game, talk to some cool people in the game, and just all about lacrosse in general. I'm really, really excited to have this guest on the show today, and shout out to her for allowing me to re-record a podcast whose audio got kind of messed up, but we're just going to have just as much fun as we did the first time we recorded. We have Amanda Mascara on the pod today. For those that don't know Amanda, she works for World Lacrosse and is very, very involved in the lacrosse community at large, both in the U.S. and internationally, and super active on social media, which is how we met. I just wanted to have a cool conversation with her and learn more about kind of her journey in the sport, what World Lacrosse does, and then talk about what is happening next summer, because next summer is crazy for lacrosse. Amanda, thank you for coming to the pod.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I love the name of your podcast too. I mean, like all the sort of punny play on words that we can do with lacrosse. I think you just, you know, hit the nail on the head with this one.
Thank you. Yeah. Shout out to all the shooting space calls that I've gotten as a defender and taken as an attacker. But yeah, gotta love it. It's a great call. So Amanda, give us a little background about yourself before we dive into all my pre-written questions that I have.
Yeah, so I am originally from the East Coast. I grew up in Connecticut in a small town known as New Canaan. Pretty well-known lacrosse town, if I'm being honest. And I'm only laughing there because, I mean, I think of like Andy Towers, I think of Arestia, I think of all these people that we know that are either in PR or the coaching side of lacrosse that are actually from my hometown, which is pretty cool. And I went to college out in Colorado and am currently actually out here right now in Colorado Springs. World Lacrosse is headquartered here in Olympic City, USA.
That's awesome. Yes. Well, so kind of diving in, obviously you talked about your town and how many great storied players came from there. So how did you start playing? When did you start playing? And, you know, kind of within the town, like what was the atmosphere like growing up and playing there?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky and I get goosebumps when I talk about this because my parents got married pretty young. They were in their 20s because they were from the Midwest. And my dad is an architect and he knew they were going to move eventually to the East Coast. And when my mom got pregnant with me and my twin sister, they decided to move to Connecticut and New Canaan specifically to give their kids opportunities. And I'm really grateful for that because I know they had no money to do it. So I look at that and I'm very thankful for parents that believed in us and really gave us the best opportunities. So New Canaan is very much known for, you know, both academics and athletics. So there are a ton of different sports programs. My parents really instilled in us at a young age that you were going to play a sport or be part of drama or some kind of activity every season. Even though at the time I rolled my eyes and probably had a couple hundred tantrums, you know, we tried every sport. And I was awful at a lot of them, if I'm being honest. You know, field hockey, not my gift. And then T-ball, straight up missed the ball. It's on a tee. It doesn't even move. But eventually I stumbled upon lacrosse. And I think the reason it really spoke to me was that it was all the best sports in one. Mm-hmm. And I really, I don't know, I just really loved it. And I really picked it up fast. I started playing in third grade and the rest is history. I was a multi-sport athlete for quite some time until it came to college. So really, really happy our parents quote unquote forced us to play sports, but I wouldn't be where I am today without it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Shout out to the multi-sports. Yeah. Love that. And of course, field hockey as well, as a fellow hockey player, which I kind of agree. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but when I was in, when was this? Maybe first grade, because I think I was as tall as my stick, but first grade, you know, in Zimbabwe, field hockey and netball are the sports for women and for girls. And I remember going to the first field hockey practice, and I was not athletic back then. I don't know when the switch flipped in my head, but, and this was also after I decided I did not like swimming. So I get to practice, and I realized I was in a different little group of four people than my best friend. And I was like, oh, no, I need to go home. I don't feel well. Like, you need to call my mom and tell her to come get me because I can't play field hockey. And so I picked it up back again in high school. And then, but that was also when I discovered lacrosse. And so it was like, field hockey just never stood a chance. And so it's just funny to hear someone else say like, yeah, I feel like it was cool. But like, really what I wanted to play was lacrosse, because that is the story of my life. So.
Yeah, I didn't think it had a chance. My sister and I were twins, so we did everything together, whether or not we liked it. But that did mean you had a buddy, or at least a sidekick whenever you were trying these new sports. And probably the first or second time, I nailed her in the chin so hard one practice. And I was like, yep, maybe it's a sign. Yeah, we're going to take a step away from this sport and focus on lacrosse. So
there are a lot of parallels, because the one time that I played here in Atlanta, which was maybe 6-ish months ago, first practice, just met these players and kind of nicely grazed someone on the cheek.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's the risk you take on the field, you know, it's the risk you take, but you find your gift set pretty quickly.
Yeah. You know, that really solidified in me, like, it's okay if it's not for you. It's a lesson in the universe. And I haven't been back since, but if anyone's listening that was there that day or on that team, hello. So, you know, kind of looking more towards getting recruited and how you ended up going out west, what was your recruitment process like, and how did you choose where you wanted to go? Because I think, especially right now with everything that's happening, you know, kind of the uncertainty of schools and things like that, I know players are even more so thinking of their recruitment journey and kind of where they want to end up next.
Yeah, so I love what coaches are saying right now, like, we'll find you. You know, if you want to be here and this college is where you think you might want to go, like, we're going to find you. And I think that really resonates with me and my recruiting experience. You know, when I was recruited, you know, many, many moons ago, recruiting wasn't near as sophisticated as it is now. You know, you have, you know, website databases, you have game film, you have this. I mean, we had a little bit of that, but really it was about being on a club team, going to every recruiting tournament humanly possible, and communicating with coaches within the window that we could. And so, really, recruiting for me started with me kind of aggressively reaching out to coaches, and then being seen at lacrosse tournaments. And from there, several months passed, and then recruiting letters came in the mail, and like legitimately, like letters came in the mail, and they were from, you know, a lot of some Division I schools, but mostly Division II and III schools. And I really had to filter through that. You know, a lot of those schools I hadn't heard of before. And I wanted to figure out, yeah, did I want to go to a small school or big school or medium-ish, and kind of find my niche? I think the biggest thing during recruiting across the board is wherever you choose needs to be where you feel most comfortable and at home without lacrosse. Like, are you going to get a phenomenal education where you're going, and you're going to like it in the winter? You know, are you okay going to Michigan? You know, I love Michigan, but I don't do great with those winter, you know, like all these things really play a part. And to kind of take the lacrosse portion, you know, how often do we hear, you know, so-and-so got recruited to play at this school and, you know, either quits or sustains a, you know, a season and, you know, ending injury, which is common. To know that the recruiting process is based on who you are, not who lacrosse makes you out to be. And so I ended up in Colorado because Regis University reached out to me, a small Jesuit school, and it didn't matter what school in Colorado had reached out. I was like, oh, heck yeah. So I went there for an official visit. And the, you know, the gorgeous backdrop of Rocky Mountains. I have family out there. And it was a 70-degree April day, and it was like done and done in that moment. So definitely game over. I knew that's where I wanted to go, and that's where I wanted to be.
That's awesome. Yes, I have heard. I don't think I've made it, or I don't think I've seen Regis in person, but definitely heard about how beautiful it is, and then just knowing Colorado and the West in general. So beautiful. But that's awesome. You know, I think really that point about finding a place where you'll thrive as a student and as a player, regardless of circumstance, is so important. And, you know, I think that's part of what makes the college experience special. Like you and anyone listening, like we deserve to be at a place that fosters your growth as a student, as an athlete. And it's great that you were able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky. I am lucky. So
feel that. Retweet. So after, you know, going to Regis and playing there, what made you decide to stay involved in lacrosse, and how were you able to find opportunities to play and coach post-collegiately?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I was a good lacrosse player. I definitely had a bit of an ego. And I think when I went to college, some upperclassmen kept me in check. And I think that helped me grow and really refined who I was. I knew in college, though, that I wanted to coach. I just knew it. You know, like I was like, this is the best thing ever. Like, why not? Like, why not teach life skills on the lacrosse field and have a blast? And so post-college, I relocated to Greenwich, Connecticut, and I was a personal assistant for a CEO. It was a crazy job, but I also knew I wanted to coach. And so I knew someone that knew someone that knew someone kind of situation that was involved in the program. And I kind of put my name out there. And I laugh about this a lot because you got to start somewhere. You know, I started my first ever coaching position, and I've been a coach for close to 15 years, was the assistant freshman coach position, assistant freshman coach. Mm-hmm. And that following season, I was then offered the assistant varsity position, and, you know, later down the line became a head coach. And, you know, that really was the foundation for me wanting to be a coach and continuing to be, you know, involved. I think post-college, we have a lot of opportunities. And I think the idea, like, you know what, no, I'm going to go on finance, I'm going to live in the city, I'm going to do this. These are all great ideas and certainly a profession to shoot for. I think we need more people to step up to the coaching realm and think, you know what, I think I'm going to do this for the next few years and maybe I'll intern somewhere. So I started coaching smack out of college and I don't regret it one bit.
That's amazing. Yeah. Especially being able to pinpoint that opportunity and like you said, you know, start somewhere, but the skills that you build as, you know, you kind of start not, I wouldn't even say the bottom, I think just, you know, entering into the coaching realm and really kind of pinpointing and finding your niche as a coach. And I think I asked you this question last time, but it was a question that I personally really liked. And that was, you know, how have you kind of built your ethos and like your coaching style, because as someone who also wants to coach and is getting more and more serious, getting certifications, things like that, I want to, you know, obviously be the best coach that I can be. And I look to a lot of people and lots of different resources to not only see what kind of coach I want to be, but just really understand how to be effective as a coach and as a person working with young people.
Yeah, that's a good question right there. I mean, if that shouldn't be in the US Lacrosse Convention, I don't know what should, but when I think about coaching and my philosophy and what I wanted from it and vice versa, what did I want to give to the next generation and the impact I wanted to make? I thought of myself when I was in high school and I thought, you know, I was not confident. I was shy. I know, crazy. I was shy. There were a lot of elements to my high school experience that were really tough, if I'm being honest. And at that point in my life, I really needed someone to help guide me. And, you know, I didn't really have that. I had a male coach. He was good, but he was tough. You know, he was a football coach. He had a tough time connecting with girls and with his players. And so when I think about my coaching philosophy, it has and continues to be, you know, be who you needed when you were younger. And from there are so many things you can build off that. You know, like if we can agree to that, you know, if I can agree that I'm human, right, and I'm going to make mistakes, but I am, in fact, going to be for every single player that I've coached, you know, even if they quit lacrosse, you know, I think of the players that call me and reach out on social media. And recently I had a pretty vulnerable post. It was something that was near and dear to my heart and needed to be talked about. And I can't tell you the overwhelming support I got from kids I hadn't heard from, you know, that were, you know, working in Boston at these incredible jobs and kicking butt and taking names, saying, you know what, like, there's a reason why we've looked up to you. And I was like, wow, that's a lot of responsibility right there. And I've never taken that responsibility lightly, knowing that, you know, what we do, we don't have to know every single game or play, right? There can be times where I totally black out and I call a play that makes no sense and the other team scores, you know, but if what I can do is going to instill values and integrity and an emotional resilience, but also vulnerability, because those go hand in hand for young women to be able to take that in the workforce and again, kick butt and take names, like, I've done my job, like, and I've done it well. You know, they may not be recruited to a Division I school. I don't care. You know, I mean, that's not my game plan. Yeah, that happens a lot, and I'm proud of how far kids can go. But I'm most proud of when they make an impact, and so that's always been part of who I am and what I do.
Yes, I love that. I'm taking notes. Hope everyone's taking notes as well. And you know, resiliency, especially. I think when our coaches instill those life skills in us, it carries on. I think of teamwork and collaboration, you know, and goal setting. I'm planning right now, my work group, some of my work friends and I are planning a virtual session to work with children that are in a youth shelter. And we're doing some kind of virtual sessions with them, and we're teaching goal setting. And I think to myself as a lacrosse player and how I set my goals and kind of how I planned what I wanted to do and where I wanted to be. And I wanted to play in college. I wanted to go to school. I wanted to work in, you know, tech and have a business. And that grit and that resilience and that ability to set my goals and stick to them absolutely came from sports and absolutely came from being held accountable by my coaches, by my teammates, by people who were counting on me to not even have it together, but to just try my best and to show up and be present, as much as I could. You know, that really all ties back to sports. So I love that, the point of view of a coach who can really instill those things in you. So we name dropped US Lacrosse a little bit, but, you know, what are the places that you go for your resources as a coach, whether it's drills or, inspiration, or, you know, we mentioned the convention, like, how do you connect with other coaches? Cause I think those are little things we don't really talk about as much either.
Yeah, I think really just having a pulse on what's happening in the lacrosse community. You know, I go to the U.S. Lacrosse Convention as often as I can, and I'm always learning something. I think the biggest thing from coaches in this sport is we share drills. Like, we all have the same or similar drills. We call them different things, and so I kind of laugh, you know, when a coach calls one drill, and I'm like, what? Oh, that's what I call it, Army-Navy. You know, that's that drill. But being able to share best practices, that really resonates with me with other club and high school coaches. And US Lacrosse is such a great resource, right? They have just so many different educational tools on their website, and World Lacrosse is launching. We are launching a new website next month, and we too will have those types of resources, which is fantastic. And so, being able to lean into those. I also, had the unique opportunity of becoming a trauma sensitive trained coach, something I didn't know existed. And this is through Up to Us, and that's AmeriCorps. I coached in Harlem for several years. And in order to coach there, you need to go to a plethora of training, but specifically trauma sensitive training. And I have to say, hands down, that was some of the best training I've ever received, because it was new to me. And like, when we continue to learn and we continue to grow, we're better for it. And so are our players. If we just kind of stop and we're doing the same drills, the same stuff, the same warm-up. I started to realize when we did this trauma sensitive, you know, training, in addition to like best practices, that like, wow, I need to have like 20 minutes before practice, mm-hmm. of time for my girls to be able to just catch up after school, and it not be a format of like, no, we have to stretch right now. Mm-hmm. I'm really used to saying, no, we have to stretch right now and get on the line, you know, and being able to give them that opportunity to like, ooh, decompress after a long day. Cause being a high school or middle school kid is tough, you know? And there are other things I learned, especially being a trauma sensitive coach, that there are triggers for kids, and it doesn't matter where you're coaching.
Right.
there are broken homes everywhere. It just looks a little bit different. What I started figuring out was what I thought I knew. I really didn't know anything when it came to coaching in Harlem. And, you know, I specifically, and Britt, if you're listening from PS 76, you remember this, but we had a kid that like straight up hated me. Like it was, I mean, and I don't blame her, you know, white girl from Connecticut coming in, like she was like, you don't deserve to be here kind of thing. You got to earn the right to be heard, which is big for me. And she, she hated me. Every drill, it was like, she was trying to hit me with the ball or like, I mean, there was so much attitude coming and I just kept showing up. Like I kept showing up, even though I cried the whole time on the train ride home to Connecticut, you know, I was like, I'm going to keep showing up. And it wasn't until that last day that like, she kind of gave me this like wimpy high five, but like you would have thought it was a gold medal at the Olympics for me. Like it was like, okay, like the kid, you know, what I didn't know and what hadn't occurred to me was that her home life was beyond abusive. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, these things didn't occur to me. And I had hit a trigger when I had told her, you know, what she had to do. It was sort of this authority thing. So I would say Up to Us has incredible coaching resources through AmeriCorps. I'd say US Lacrosse, Positive Coaching Alliance, like all of these are great resources to really be like a full coach, because you can know all the drills, but you got to know the heart behind the jersey too if you're ever going to make an impact. So that's
absolutely
big.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. I love this. Love this. And I'll make sure to share the links as well so everyone can make sure that they are able to access or look into the programs, because I do think, you know, that's really important. And I think a lot of times, or at least, like I said, you know, kind of being short into my coaching career, sometimes we don't really think about the emotional part of coaching. And I've been so lucky to work with a lot of really, really great coaches, especially, you know, as a single foot clinician and being able to be in a position to now be a lead clinician, working with coaches that are so good at connecting with the players and speak to the players in such like a caring way of, we're just here to bring you the game and like teach you how to play. And, you know, your best is all we ask. And especially when it's something completely new and you're people that they don't know, like if random people showed up to me and were trying to yell at me and teach me to do something, I probably wouldn't be super happy about it. So you know, it's just a matter of even the simplest things that we can do is just bring kind of our best selves and our most understanding selves. And I think that applies to life in general, but that's definitely something that rings true that I've learned in coaching is, you know, you don't have to step in ready to teach X's and O's and cuts and I don't know, all the other things. You know, you could just show up and be ready to be a good coach. So
yeah, there was one dad I was talking to when I was working with a program in Fairfield, and I had done a coaching seminar, like coaching philosophy specifically on this. I said, look, there's going to be kids that drive you bonkers. Like, are you kidding? A kid that never has their cleats, or I think I left my stick at home, or you know, the ball is on one side of the field and they're looking at the other side of the field. I said, you know, that kid might not be a, you know, a Division I lacrosse player long-term, and actually pretty unlikely, but they know it. And I'm like, if we can just say one thing to make their day. And I'm like, I told a kid once, I really like your jersey. It's really cool. And like, I made her year. You would have thought it was like the greatest thing ever. So we talk a lot about big picture, right? And like running the play and winning the game. And we've all done that. And I've been part of that too. And I've been part of some really great championships, but it's those small things that really make an impact. So if we can do the small things well, we'll do the big things really well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. That just pulled a memory out of, I think it was my senior year in high school. I coached first graders, maybe it was like 5 and 6 mixed team.
Oh, and God bless you. God,
we had to be on the field with them. So it was already, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Like, this is going to be hilarious. And I remember we had one player. So we had one who's like the superstar, like, but just, she had like 6 sisters or something. So she just knew what lacrosse was from very early on. And then one other player was just the sweetest little thing. And she would just stand there and watch the butterflies and pick flowers and show me the flowers. And like, you know what? Cool. Like, yes, like you're here, you're engaging with nature, and we're just going to do our best. What you going to, you know, yeah. I'm just not, yeah, I was like, I'm not going to make this difficult for you. Like, you probably don't even fully understand what's happening anyway. So just, this is fine. Like, catch when you need to. I would just give her a heads up. Like, okay, like, stick up, ground ball. But otherwise, pick your flowers, kid. Do your thing.
Yeah, pick all the flowers. I like it.
Now, if I tried that, I probably wouldn't get it. Probably would not. And so with all the shutdown sadness and craziness and all the things, one thing that I'm really, really excited about is what's happening next summer. So for those that do not know, next summer, lots of stuff going on. So first or second, I don't know the dates that well because they're just mushed up in my head, but we have the women's world championships, which are going to be in Towson, and then we have the U20 boys championships in Ireland.
Yeah, you got it, you nailed it.
Yes. And you know, obviously, so, you know, feel so bad for the players that were looking to, you know, make their debut or go represent their countries this year, but it's awesome that, you know, you've been able to, or the organization has been able to rework the dates and make it happen for next summer and give us like a jam-packed international lacrosse action-packed summer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be packed. You know, I have to give props to World Lacrosse because, you know, we're the international federation for this sport, you know, and we're recognized by the Olympic Committee and the Global Association of International Sports Federations, and we've worked so hard as a team. Right. And so I especially want to give, you know, props and credit to Sue Redfern, our president, and she's in England and a just incredible person in this sport. Our CEO, Jim Shear, you know, who basically said, all right, let's do this, you know, who got out there ahead of it and over-communicated on the front end, and that's what we've got to do. And then, of course, Daryl Seibel, who does all things communication, and right now that's key. And so there's been so much work gone into all of this, and I got to thank this organization because they're just incredible in it. And the idea that next year we have the unique opportunity of having two world championships in one year. And now we are calling it the U20 men's championship in Limerick, Ireland, excuse me, and the women's world championship in Towson. And so it's going to be jam packed. I'm excited. I mean, goodness gracious, how can you not be? Mm-hmm. It was, you know, fantastic to see the support we got when we said, you know what, we're going to, We obviously can't have this year because right. of the current landscape, but we're going to have it next year. And the overwhelming responses we got from our member nations just kind of proved that what we were doing was the right decision. So 2021 is going to be jam-packed full of international lacrosse. I'm excited. You know, 66 member nations now is huge. So yeah, I'm excited for this sport and especially excited for 21.
Absolutely. Yeah, if my sister is listening to this, please know I'm sleeping on your couch when it's in Towson because you're right there. I'm sorry. Just automatic volunteer. have to do it. But yeah, no, like you said, and you know, it's props to everyone who made this happen because I'm sure the stress levels were very high, especially with fans, you know, asking questions, and I'm sure players and coaches and everyone who's so involved and really invested in the events. I mean, that's just going to be amazing. I don't know how I'm going to manage all my time. I'm trying to also travel to go to Portugal. I'm just,
yeah. Yeah. I tried looking at my schedule next year. I'm like, All right. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast. I mean, what a great opportunity for this sport internationally too. And, you know, Towson, you know, we think about lacrosse and you know, Maryland's the kind of mecca epicenter. So I think that's going to be incredible too. I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So how did you get involved with World Lacrosse? Like, how did you start working there?
I just kept annoying them. I think, you know, when we talk about resilience, no, I'm kidding. I, you know, moved out to Colorado. I did so initially. I actually moved out here. My grandpa was very sick and I decided, you know, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to take care of him for a little bit. He's much better. But I moved out here and knew I wanted to be involved with lacrosse. And at the time had really connected with a club program called Team 180. Shout out to Sam and Team 180. They're incredible. And then, reached out to World Lacrosse and Daryl Seibel and said, you know, this is my history. Can I become involved? And was kind of relentless in that and initially came on board for a project specifically for Sport Accord, which is a global sports conference, which is an incredible gathering of all the best in sports, and helped film a virtual reality experience. And from there, kind of got my foot in the door, if I'm being honest. So those of you listening being like, well, how did you come involved? They asked for my help and I said yes, and the rest is history. And so it's been a really incredible experience to be part of this federation as it continues to grow. I mean, we're at 66 member nations, and you know, we conduct world championships in five disciplines, you know, men's, women's, men's U19, even though it's U20 next year, women's U19 and men's indoor. And so when I expressed my interest in the pieces, you know, kind of fell into place. You know, we laugh about that, but this has been several years in the making. You know, I was a lacrosse coach for so long and involved with the sport, both on the brand management side and beyond. And so I knew I wanted to become involved in something that was a challenge. Like, I love a good challenge. And I also really wanted to be part of the leadership side of things internationally. You know, I was ready to kind of hang my coach's hat, for, you know, lack of cheesy metaphors, but I was ready to transition to full leadership. And so that's initially how I got my foot in the door, was just kind of being a little bit relentless.
I love that. Yeah. And that's actually interesting too, because I think we don't really discuss kind of the levels within the game. Like, I'm still discovering different levels in the game, just entering as a fan and then doing social media. And then now I have my podcast, and sometimes I write and I coach and I do these things, but the leadership part is such a big opportunity as well. And, you know, I'm sure there are tons of people out there who love the game. I'd love for them to consider different opportunities as well. To be part of the decision makers and to be part of, you know, the people putting together all these amazing events and making lacrosse inclusive and making events inclusive and all these different things. So that's good to know, you know, relentless and pursuing your passions and finding new paths for yourself within the lane that you love.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been really blessed in that. So, you know, they took initially a chance. I wouldn't say it was a, you know, a chance, but they took a chance on me and brought me on board as a contracted, you know, social digital media developer, and had the unique pleasure of joining the broadcast teams for both the U19 Women's Championship last summer and the Indoor Men's Championships. And that was something that I had done on the side, you know, at Lacrosse Talk Radio out here in Colorado, and I had covered men's games, actually, men's collegiate games, and then women's games. And I didn't really think of it as a career supplement. I just kind of was like, oh, this is really fun and I really like it. Right. And next thing you know, I'm covering 10 days of games. And I was like, wow, this is pretty incredible. And so I'm really grateful to World Lacrosse for all of this and the experiences thus far.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. You crushed it during the announcing as well. Gotta give you props. Gotta give props where they're due. And so you mentioned when you started with them, you were kind of being a contractor with social media. And so obviously you're very involved in lacrosse social media. Let's chat hashtag Lax Twitter, because there's so much going on every day. There's something new on lacrosse Twitter. I open my phone, I scroll, I want to post a little meme, maybe a funny tweet. It's like, oh, here we go. Like, something's happened. Someone got traded. Someone got drafted. You know, this is happening with this program. How have you seen social media, and I think especially Twitter, kind of reshape, not even reshape, impact the game?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly impacted the game. I mean, we talk about the growth of lacrosse worldwide, and we're definitely growing, but historically, I mean, lacrosse has been a niche sport primarily here in North America, you know, and it is in other nations and countries and islands for that matter, but it's mostly known here. And I think social digital and social media has helped really continue to develop the sport worldwide. And I'm happy by that. It is nonstop. I mean, we were talking about it before. Right. It doesn't stop. I have seen social media continue to grow collectively. And I think, you know, even though we can disagree on some of that content, regardless if it's out there, it's expanding impressions globally. Mm-hmm. And it's engaging audiences we haven't, you know, seen before. I saw something recently and it was Eric Law. Elaw, what's up? He's out here in Colorado too. You know, he had tweeted something about hurling, and hurling is huge in Ireland. And lacrosse is still growing. It's definitely, you know, a known sport there, but hurling is their jam. And I saw him tweet about it, and what is a sport? This is the best thing ever. It looks like lacrosse, but also baseball and all of that. And it was sort of like seeing those two worlds collide. Like, we, if we ever needed cross-marketing, it was that. And to see, you know, Eric engaged in a different sport, but also then those hurlers were now engaged in lacrosse. And I saw that, and I kind of saw that unfold, thinking, you know what, we need to circle back on this. This is really good as we look forward to Limerick and what our, you know, marketing plan of attack and strategy is going to be. So I think lacrosse social media, just like any other sport, is definitely 24/7. I think lacrosse is definitely different in some ways. And, you know, the sport is growing. I've seen content more recently that is deeper, and that's the stuff I like. You know, you can tweet all day long and, you know, be the negative Nancy, you know, person that's looking for retweets and comments, or you can tweet random things all day. But when I see something that really means a lot and is deeper, I know long term that those are going to get bigger and better impressions. So the sport is growing, and I think, you know, certainly lacrosse social media is growing too.
Yeah, definitely. No, that hurling post went crazy. Let me see if I can, I'll try to look up the numbers as we chat. But yeah, it was so cool to see other people involved in other sports, especially like involved in hurling, explain to us the rules and then kind of say, okay, like, well, this is how it's similar, this is how it's different, and different, just interacting with other people in other sports and that drumming up for us and us discovering something new was really, really awesome. So I think that's one of the huge positives of Twitter and of social media in itself, is just the different connections that we can make.
Absolutely. And if you're a hurler right now and you're in Ireland, just know that we would love to see you at the Limerick Festival. You can learn lacrosse and you can teach all of us how to play hurling. So I just put it in your calendar.
Yep. So,
yeah. June, excuse me.
I'll plan up for that too. Listen, I can hurl. I can do it. I think
I'm excited. I think it looks
cool. People in the face. But yeah, no, Amanda, if you need a sidekick, I will save some PTO and come to Ireland. I will tweet. I will take pictures. I will post. I will put on the hurling helmets and hold the stick and do things for you. I will do that.
So, all right. Noted. It's for us, though. It's for World Lacrosse. It's for us.
At World Lacrosse. Let me just tweet them real quick. Something else that I was really curious about in conjunction with kind of the thoughts about social media is, you know, how maybe you can answer this either as you probably need to answer this as you. I don't know if you can answer on behalf of World Lacrosse, but when rule changes occur or things happen, there's always kind of this like wave of responses. And maybe as someone who's really involved in the game and obviously very close to kind of where the decisions are made, you know, how do you handle that feedback, and how do organizations like World Lacrosse, big sports organizations, handle feedback from fans while maintaining the growth momentum of their sport?
Yeah, I'm going to answer this as me, and then I'm going to put my World Lacrosse hat on. I think the Amanda that is out on social media now is significantly different from the Amanda that started a year ago. And what I realized soon into working in communications is you have to have thick skin, even if you are passionate about the sport and my heart is in it. And that's true. Like, I'm never going to be able to shake that away. Like, I'm not going to be able to just lacrosse. It's intricately part of me and it's in my blood. Like, that's just the name of the game. So I am going to get defensive. I might be hypersensitive. And so knowing that you don't have to fight every fight, and every fight isn't worth engaging in. And so I really came to terms with that. And I also came to terms with the fact that, like, my position now is in an international, like, leadership team. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful and proud of that. But when what I represent now is an international federation in everything I do. Like, so if I want to respond back and, you know, really sass back to someone that, you know, quote unquote, hurt my feelings because they're saying something that's, you know, I don't know, controversial or, you know, anything, I know that my response reflects the federation I work for. And I need to think that way in everything I do. I didn't always think like that. That changed. And I'm thankful for the leadership and the team I work with, where they were like, hey, we love you. We love the passion. That's why we hired you. Like, we think these are good, but also know now your role is changing and this is how international federations work. And, you know, historically we, you know, we're pretty new to the scene. If we think about, you know, World Lacrosse, formerly known as the Federation of International Lacrosse, you know, like, we continue to evolve and change. And I want to make sure we do that in the right direction. So, I think, like, World Lacrosse hat, you know, knowing that you're not always going to make everyone happy. We think about that as a coach. Like, I do, I love coaching analogies because, oh, I don't know, I was a lacrosse coach, you know, and knowing that you're not going to make everyone happy all the time. Like, if I change a starting lineup because I wanted to, because I'm the coach, hello, or edit a game schedule or make cuts to, like, my squad, there's going to be someone that's really unhappy that thinks I'm the worst human on earth. Like, it really, what matters in this is how I take it. Mm-hmm. And do you internalize it? Do you shoot back? Or do you realize, like, this is part of evolving? Right. And, like, evolution is hard and change is hard to some people. And so not everyone likes it. And there's going to be someone, you know, saying you're ruining the game and all of this stuff. But the key here is knowing what voices matter in this and really having perspective. And if I can communicate, and if we as a federation can communicate wisely and frequently, like, we're okay. You know, like, we've done our job. And also giving all parties, even if I don't agree with what someone says, or even though we might not agree with what someone says, like, we always want to give them an opportunity to have their voice be heard, you know, and that's the name of the game. So, I mean, that's the long answer to your question, but I think the biggest takeaway is evolution and change are hard, and not everyone's going to like it, and you're going to have to get over that.
Straight into the point.
Boom.
As someone who sometimes is like, I don't like that rule, I've learned that gotta do what we gotta do.
Yeah.
The Olympics, we want everyone to succeed. We want players to have a chance to play. So, I respect it. You know, and in terms of rules, where do you personally see the women's game kind of evolving to, both professionally and on the world stage? Because I think that's something else that's also a big topic of conversation. It's like, when will the women's game evolve? And we're like, it's already evolved. But then I understand that the question is more so, you know, with rules changing and the game kind of adjusting to either be at a faster pace or be set for the world stage, you know, things need to happen to get it there.
Yeah. I think to answer that question, I don't know if I could just separate women out. So I guess I'll initially start with this. Like, when we talk about evolution and change of the sport, and we want to see it, and at least I do. I mean, look, in 2020, I want to see lacrosse being played at the highest level possible. Like, I want to see it in the Olympics. And, you know, if I'm on the sideline, incredible. But if I am sitting in my living room watching it on TV, what an incredible opportunity for this sport and for kids, you know, to be able to play this and the next generation. In order for that to happen, we, and when I say we, World Lacrosse developed this 6v6 discipline. And it's gotten backlash and it's gotten support and welcome to change. I mean, that's par for the course, but the 6v6 really expedites the growth of the game. So not just the women's game, the men's game. So what ends up happening is, you know, the Blue Skies Working Group, which is made up of some incredible lacrosse players and figures and advocates and international sports professionals, mm-hmm. you know, decided and figured out through the help of, you know, communicating with the IOC that we need to come up with an abbreviated version. And it really will expedite the growth of the game because more kids and more players and more adults, you know, have an opportunity to play it. There's a greater, you know, success for inclusion in the Olympics too. You know, it makes it just, it's not near as expensive. There is a financial portion of this and, you know, with a lower barrier to entry. So fewer players, we talk about this, like a fewer roster, cause it's 6v6 and a smaller playing field and less specialization because the rules are a little bit different and less cost. I mean, man, this is a catalyst for growth if I've ever seen one.
Right.
You know, and as much as we're always going to be like, wow, this rule's silly and this, yeah, we're tweaking some stuff, but for the most part, we have a really great model. And I had the incredible opportunity of calling the WPLL All-Star Game versus Team USA, and this 6v6 discipline was streamed live on LSN, and I'm calling this game, and it's so fast, and every shot is like a SportsCenter top 10. I mean, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. Back and forth. I mean, poor Tom is trying to do play-by-play, and I'm like, hey, I told you it's going to be fast. And you look around and there's like 5,000 middle school, high school girls just like ooing and eyeing and cheering. Right. And I'm like, this is what it's about. Like you might disagree with the rules. And believe me, like, you know, there are some high school rules. I'm like, what? Why do we still have this? Or some college rules where I'm like, sweet baby Jesus, this needs to change. But like at the end of the day, if we look at the, you know, end game, right? I think this is just incredible. If we can see, you know, this is why we're doing it, and that a 6v6 discipline actually fosters growth for the other disciplines we have, right. You know, indoor lacrosse and the traditional game of lacrosse, like they actually kind of are all married together and they can live in harmony and support each other. And, you know, the cost to this, we talked about that briefly before, but, you know, it'll give teams and countries that we've never seen lacrosse played here before will have an opportunity to pick up a stick because they can, you know. And that's huge. I think that's huge for both the men's and women's side. And this is a long answer to your question because I could talk about this till I'm like purple, blue, or whatever color in the face. But you know, we talk about you know, the women's side of the game. And as it continues to evolve, you know, we've had the opportunity and the WPLL has done an incredible job bringing, you know, pro lacrosse, to the table. That's really specific, you know, the WPLL, you know, a seemingly kind of new entity, really needs support. Mm-hmm. And I think it looks you know, a little different than what people really see as support. They think, you know, a retweet or a yay, go WPLL is going to get that stuff done. But there's way more to get done. And I can talk about that some more if you want, but.
I mean, we have time, you know, because that's one of the reasons why I wanted you on this podcast, aside from just fun conversations about, you know, working for World Across and tweeting about things, but you keep it real, right? Like we, in our, you know, timeline conversation, our DMs, our texts, whatever, like we talk about these things. And one of the things I grapple with and I'm very vocal about is like, there just needs to be more for the women's professional game. Like, and maybe I can't always vocalize what that more is perfectly, but I'm sure you can. And I would love to hear what in your mind, like is what we need to do aside from just these social media pushes.
Yeah. Yeah, there. I think a little bit of this too, and really kind of painting the picture of where we need to go forward, has to be done if we look like where did we come from, right? Like since the 1970s, women's sports have been fighting, right? And we are very passionate, right? And there are pleas across the board to equalize opportunities, you know, that have been echoing since the 1970s. And they seem to resurface every time we talk about the state of women's sports. I think we can all agree across the table that there's no question many female athletes are still underdogs right now when compared to their male counterparts. And that's the reality of it. That doesn't make me happy, but that's a reality. And I think on the flip side of that, and on in a positive light, we've seen the growth of women's lacrosse at the NCAA professional and international level. That should be celebrated, but the work is not done. Like, okay, like we're getting there, but we're not, you know, yet there. I think my opinion is, and take it as you will, that, you know, women's professional lacrosse needs more than crusaders. We need to take a really in-depth look and assessment of, you know, business and economic realities pro leagues are facing. I mean, outside of the current landscape, I mean, this is all disastrous to the economy right now, if we're being honest. But if we take that portion out and we kind of look at it before this all happened, you know, there's a deeper look that needs to be seen. And I think, you know, being a pro league, whether it's men's or women's, in the current landscape, you know, people and advocates and fans and soon to be fans, you know, really think you don't have the right to be pro if you can't generate ticket sales, or, you know, if your social media engagement isn't, you know, I don't know, off the wall and impactful TV ratings. I think the WPLO should grow, and I want it to grow, because the product is exceptional. Are you kidding me? Like, exceptional, yeah. Hands down. I mean, I've seen how many lacrosse games on both the men's and women's side, and there are some fantastic lacrosse games that I've seen. The WPLL is the real deal too, you know, and that should be celebrated. So I guess my plea, and I guess my plea is women who have means, you know, invest in the WPLL and own a team. You know, we've seen it on the men's side, and we see it in other sports. Like, this is how they're going to flourish. This is how they're going to get support. And I think, you know, for the foreseeable future, and this is because, you know, women's lacrosse pro league and women's pro leagues in general, really need support of existing male sports leagues, to gain footing. And that's footing, you know. From there, you know, there could be big things to happen. I imagine, and I pray to sweet, sweet baby Jesus, we have a lacrosse version of Billie Jean King, you know? She fought hard, I mean hard, for women's tennis because she knew it was worth it.
Right.
She didn't have the support and footing of a whole bunch of men all the time, you know? And I think we need women in leadership to offer the same support for women's lacrosse. Mm-hmm. So I think about, like, the big hitters and the CEOs of incredible companies, you know, that are thinking about how, you know, where they should invest, or what kind of philanthropy they should move forward with, or charity. And I'm thinking, take a look at the WPLL and tell me that's not something that's worth it, you know? And that's huge for me. You know, I'd really love to see that. We can't always rely on, you know, women's lacrosse coaches to be the only support system here, or women's lacrosse fans. We need women that have means. I mean, come on, Oprah. Let's do this, you know? I mean, I don't care. Ellen, step up, Ellen. You know, so that's the WPLL portion. My international hat is a little bit different. You know, I'm fully aware that there are not equal rights, for women globally. And that hurts my heart, and that makes me sad. And I know that some cultures don't even recognize that women can be athletes, and that pains me. I think if we can show them a very successful women's pro lacrosse league, then maybe this will help us continue to evolve internationally, not just here domestically. So, but yeah, Oprah and Ellen, let's go.
Yep. Ellen, I know you're listening. So just please consider our small request for you to help us. And yeah, just give me a couple of years, guys. I got this. Kitchen when I sell my company to Amazon or whomever I sell it to in the end. But no, that's really good insight. And I think you put it so eloquently in fact, like, this is really what we need, and that's what we're working towards. And like you said, you know, these are all things in motion, but it's always good to put that call to action out and say, like, hey, just making sure people are paying attention, like, got to put this out into the listeners' ears and hope for some changes. But no, I am super excited to see how the game continues to evolve and where we end up next. And just, you know, like I said, I'll be in Towson screaming my little lungs out at the game and just enjoying the atmosphere and continuing to support the women's game and the men's game, obviously, at every level.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Absolutely. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for joining me today. We've had a blast chatting round two, and I think this conversation, I don't know how, in some way, somehow, was even better the first time. So excited to share this with everyone. And I'm just, you know, really, really pumped. Oh, don't forget to plug your Twitter so that people follow you, because, you know, they need to come in.
Oh, don't follow. I'm not that exciting. I'm not like you. I mean, I do know you have a personal Twitter now, which I'm
apparently, you know, I have like four. I make one every couple of years and I forget the password. One of my best friends actually texted me and was like, "What happened to your other one?" I was like, "Girl, I don't know the password because
it's not I love lax. I don't know. I don't know what it is."
Yeah, it's not, it was not. I think, for any variation.
I think if I could give any plug right now, it's to get behind World Lacrosse and what we're doing and where we're going, because we're moving fast and with intention. And we think this sport deserves the world, literally. So if you can, you know, follow us on social digital, World Lacrosse Sport on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. I know Facebook's a little older. My mom's on there though. But you know, become involved and engaged. You know, we've got some great content coming out. It's mental health awareness week in the UK and mental health awareness month. And we have some really exciting stuff coming out, especially next month with 1 year out to Limerick. So make sure you guys stay tuned and connected, but thank you for having me on. This was a blast.
Of course. Anytime, stay safe. And I'm sure I'll see you soon in some lacrosse capacity when we're all able to travel again.
You know it. Maybe we'll get you to Limerick. I don't know. We got to pull some things.
Awesome. One way or another, I will find my way there.
All right. Sounds good.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.